So yesterday, the Walt Disney Company held their earnings phone call where they talk about how much money they basically make and what their earnings for their shareholders are. Now, usually it comes with a little bit of information on that, so it usually allows them to give a direct briefing from the Walt Disney Company to investors on what they should expect and kind of what's happening. Now, the interesting thing is there is a question and answer session at the end of all the earning calls where people from basically hedge funds and banks and things like that get to ask questions of Bob Iger, and he gets to answer them pretty candidly and gets to give responses on where he sees the Disney Company going. And what's quite interesting is obviously it starts off very, very formal and they read from pre-prepared scripts and it's all very above board and things. However, when they answer questions, it certainly goes off a little bit and it allows them to continually talk about what's happening, what's in the pipeline. So there are a couple of interesting things that came from the first quarter earning for fiscal 2019, which is really quite interesting because first quarter earnings are not quite what you think. So first quarter is defined oddly as October, November and December, okay, which is really strange because we think quarter one being January, February, March. However, it's not. It's October, November, December. And in fact, the fiscal year for Disney ended on December 29th. So just to make it really, really difficult, they obviously done that. So the first quarter, and this is important for something we discuss later on in today's episode, because the first quarter has already ended. It ended in December and we're already in quarter two. So one of the things that they're looking at just now is obviously the 21st Century Fox acquisition, where they're going to pick up some new IPs and they're going to pick up obviously the whole catalogue that Fox offer, and it's going to be very interesting for Disney because it's a whole lot of new properties that they can integrate. It's a little bit of Marvel as well, and there's certainly things in there that are going to be quite useful for them that they already have some of, but obviously more IP and the greater catalogue makes them an absolute giant. In fact, I'm pretty sure they've gone from biggest to even bigger sort of thing. And the second thing they talk about, which we're not going to cover in any great detail, is the Disney Plus streaming service, which they basically confirmed they are going all in on, and they basically bought the company that makes the technology that powers it, which is called BAMTech, which I thought was a fantastic name, very Scottish word, BAM. I'm not sure BAM Technologies is a fantastic title, however, they have bought it and it's been very successful. It already powers ESPN Plus and it's going to power Disney Plus, and they've already said that it can handle lots and lots of people paying and lots of people signing up and lots of people streaming at the same time. So they seem quite confident Disney Plus is going to be a success. But where they sort of segue into some more interesting news, and there's two real pieces of news that you can kind of glean from that. So the first thing that they talk about, or I should say it's not the first thing they talk about, but it's something that I picked up and I want to cover really, really quickly, is the fact that Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is obviously opening in Anaheim, and they've kind of said it's opening earlier in the year in Anaheim, and we kind of know that's going to be around June. But what they confirmed for Walt Disney World, they were pressed on it a little bit, when do you kind of foresee that happen? And one of the questions and one of the answers and the guidance that they give is they originally, and I forget the lady's name that was given us the information at the time, but she said, oh, well, you know, we envisage that happening later on in the fiscal year. Now, the fiscal year is defined, believe it or not, as October last year, so October 2018 was quarter one of 2019 fiscal year, and then quarter two will obviously be January, February, March, quarter three will be April, May, June, and then obviously July, August, September, making up quarter four. So she said fiscal year, however, this is where it gets interesting. She said by the fiscal year, however, she was very quickly corrected, and that is important. She was corrected by none other than Bob Iger himself, who then turned around and said, calendar, not fiscal. So that's interesting, because it tells us that while we've been told to have a look at the fall, which is conceivably anything from the end of August all the way through to kind of mid-November, there is fall. She said fiscal, she was corrected very quickly, and I mean it's subtle, it's in there about 31 and a half minutes long. She was corrected to say calendar, Now, calendar is important because we understand the calendar is obviously later on, which tells us that if it's not in the fiscal year, it means it's not by September 30th. And remember that this is a shareholders thing. This is a proper regulated activity where they're giving advice. So obviously they had to issue a correction very quickly. They correct it and say calendar year, which tells us that it's unlikely to be in the fiscal year, which kind of tells us it's not August, it's not September, and it brings October and November squarely into the picture. So you do have that. I do have my views that it'll probably not open in October because the Halloween party's on at the Magic Kingdom. I can just imagine if people are at the Halloween party, if you can't get to the Magic Kingdom on a given day because of the Halloween party, it's a lot of people that are going to overload Disney's Hollywood Studios. Could be wrong. Might be the best time. Give them the greatest launch ever. Bob Iger also joked that he probably won't have to market it. He'll just need to tweet that it's open and people will turn up. So that was a little bit of information where we can glean that it's obviously not going to be the August or the September, and we're now looking firmly into the October and the November period. So it doesn't confirm a date for us. However, it limits the scope down from a whole, you know, 90 days plus season down to 45. So we're a lot closer. If you want to go on a 45-day holiday, you should probably, if you book from kind of the 1st of October all the way through to the middle of November, you should be lucky. Imagine that. Imagine you booked it and then it opened on November the 16th. You'd be absolutely gutted. I suppose fall could be, fall's just something people make up. It's not even the scientific term. The second piece of information that I wanted to give you, and the second piece that I want to focus on, is they talk about, obviously, the amount of people visiting the parks. So it was no surprise that the domestic parks, they call domestic because they're an American company, their domestic parks are of course Disneyland in Anaheim, California, and the Walt Disney World parks in Orlando, Florida. And they speak about that and say domestic revenues are up, domestic attendance is up, domestic hotels is up, blah blah blah, all up. And then they talk about the international markets, and they mentioned that Hong Kong is doing particularly well. However, there is a slight decrease in basically all the other foreign parks, and that includes our beloved Disneyland Paris. So effectively, there is a little bit of dip in guests in Disneyland Paris, which isn't a surprise for any of our alert readers, because if you follow my website or you read our blog, you will be able to see the yearly wait times, which are available in the top menu, and you would already know that. You would already know there was less guests because the wait times have been lower through the whole of 2018 than they have been for the whole of 2017. So that would have been your first clue. I mean, we knew that, so there you go. Of course, it's not scientific because there could be rides off and on, there could be greater capacity, there could just be better operation, blah, blah, blah. However, you would have had the first clue to that. And what we know is from that, he was kind of asked, you know, are you worried about this, or what's the overall goal, or what do you intend to do, sort of thing. And, you know, what is your kind of thing on this that you think you're going to have to do? And a lot of it focused on what they're doing studio wise. Obviously, we have no, and I'm not talking about the Walt Disney Studios, I'm talking about the actual their studio, as in their production studio. And that was where they kind of gave the answer that, you know, that, you know, it does well for us. It's not, our studios are really well, but, you know, and but they're down because they had massive releases in 2017, and then they didn't have massive releases in 2018 in the first fiscal quarter. They were down something ridiculous like 27% or some nonsense like that. And that was on revenue. And they basically said, you know, that just happens. That's kind of what we do. And we're sinking money into our direct-to-consumer market, which is our Disney Plus. However, that's when they go on. And it's quite important to mention this. If you look at their kind of their overall sort of operating income, obviously their studio does very well, and their media networks, so your Disney Channel, your ABC, your ESPN, all that, is a phenomenal chunk of the company. It really is a phenomenal chunk of the company. Probably, you know, it's just under half the company. But parks, experiences, and consumer products. So I presume the consumer products are also licensed material, so that's your toys and things like that, and kind of like anything that wants a Mickey Mouse and it has to pay a licensing fee and that. So you've got that for your parks, experiences, and consumer products. This is stuff they can sell. And their parks and experiences and consumer products is the largest segment of the company. So it's the largest, and that brings us on to why Disneyland Paris is getting an investment. Because the truth is, for this company, the most stable bit of it, the most predictable bit of the whole company, is it may go up a little bit, it may go down a little bit, but they actually know that is the most stable part of their whole company. Their parks, their resorts, their experiences, everything like that. It's very, very stable for the Disney company. It's recurrent income that comes every year. People really like it. People really like turning up. You know, they go back, they have annual passes. It's, you know, for Disney, it's a fairly stable bet. And while Disneyland Paris is minorly decreasing just now, what they did point out, and he was quite bullish about pointing out, is we do parks very well. And Bob Iger says we do parks very well, and he contrasted it at one point to they don't do video games very well. He said self-publishing on video games is something we've never been very good at, so it's not something we are probably going to jump into. I mean, we have a lot of money, we could jump into it. We're not going to jump into it because, you know, licensing it is just as good for us, and to be honest, we're not great at it. So it was good to see that sort of candor, but then he says parks are very good. We're very, very good at theme parks. And he then goes on to cite examples that he is expanding, obviously, with Galaxy's Edge in California and Walt Disney World. He spoke about Toy Story Playland that opened in Disney's Hollywood Studios and as investment again in Disney World. And then he talks about, you know, we're throwing money at Hong Kong and we're throwing money at Paris and we're throwing, you know. And he basically points out Disneyland Paris is getting this massive expansion, and that's true. And the reason it's getting that expansion, and the reason that a lot of people are always kind of doubtful, like, oh, Disneyland Paris, doom, doom, doom. The truth is, Disney fairly know when they open new attractions, open new worlds, and when they make it immersive. To be honest, they know they can drive more guests. You know, 2012, when they had the 20th anniversary, massive crowds, great investment, Disney Dreams, everything like that, drove people to the park. And they know that Ratatouille is certainly, once it opened in the Walt Disney Studios, a great amount of guests went there. Even if you've gone and seen PhilharMagic, which is the newest attraction at Disneyland Paris, if you go and see PhilharMagic, the shows are still fairly full. I mean, people are still excited about a new attraction at Disneyland Paris, so people are excited by this. You also have the other problem that the American parks are absolutely full at the brim. And this is where they have a nice problem, because the parks are over capacity, and Bob Iger recognises when the parks are over sort of like a nice capacity, it can be quite uncomfortable and guests don't have a great time. So he talks about in America, they can deal with that on, you know, tiered pricing, and then they do one day tickets on tiered pricing and things, and that tries to reduce the overall flow of people. They have block out days in their annual passes, and they put their annual pass on any day for any day. If you want an any day annual pass, you have to pay a lot more now in the American parks. And that's a realization that, to be honest, they know that, you know, they need to lessen the crowds on some busy days and try and spread the load over the quieter days. So you get a better deal if you go for a lesser annual pass. And if you choose to go every single day and go all the busy times, then yeah, you're going to struggle. You're going to have to pay a lot more. So one of the other ways they can do this, and while they didn't say it directly, you can almost feel it's implied. Walt Disney World, and certainly some people go to California as well. I've been to California. I know there's a lot of people on Disney Twitter that have been to California. But there are a lot of people who travel and go to Walt Disney World and go to California. And the truth is, if they could get a lot of these people to divert to Disneyland Paris, they could fill up some unused capacity in Disneyland Paris and realise the potential there. And then secondly, they can lessen the load on their American parks, especially at a time when the pound and the dollar aren't doing so well. The pound and the euro have always been kind of slightly in parity anyway. But obviously, you can have a look and you can see that if they can siphon off some of the capacity from Europe and kind of the capacity from the UK and other countries such as France and Germany, if you can pull some of that into Disneyland Paris, and you can do that by building some of the same attractions. So if Galaxy's Edge could be a huge attraction, you're going to get Star Wars fans all over the world wanting to go and see Galaxy's Edge. If you build it in Disneyland Paris, you don't need to travel to the Florida to do that. It's nice, and Disney like it if you do. However, they would like to use all their assets, and now that they fully own Disneyland Paris, there's a lot more synergy that way. You can kind of see that already, because the latest Disney World brochure, so I ordered that online, got my little book of magic tricks or tips or whatever it was. And in that, it actually features on the front cover Disneyland Paris. It actually tells you at the front Disneyland Paris, and then at the end it talks about Disneyland Paris, talks about seasons, and tries to invite you to Disneyland Paris. So there's a whole section in the Disney World brochure for Disneyland Paris now, which, as far as I'm aware, and from what people seem to be confirming online, is that seems to be a first. And that's literally, I believe, you know, I'm obviously not giving you any financial advice here, and this is not a shareholders podcast or an earnings report. What we've fully believe there is that they are moving some of the people and trying to encourage people to come and try Disneyland Paris and realize that, you know, there's a resort on your doorstep. You might not go as long, but you will enjoy it just as much. And we're going to put some of the key and top attractions across there. And you can kind of see that from Ratatouille. went from Walt Disney Studios now being built in Epcot, and then certainly they're building their own version of Frozen, they're building Galaxy's, you know, I'm not going to say it's Galaxy's Edge, but there's Star Wars coming, and then there's Marvel. So three huge attractions all come to Paris in their second park. So the second park, the Walt Disney Studios, is going to get built up to be an amazing park. And it's kind of interesting when you hear kind of Bob Iger talking that you can almost feel the strategy and you can watch it unplaying from kind of the news and the rumours that we've had before. So it's a very interesting time. It's also worth noting the Walt Disney Company website runs on WordPress, the same as my blog, so I'm quite impressed that we both use the same system to to host our content. So that was a roundup. I've been Graham, and goodbye.